And he had like 8 years of sobriety. Mm-hmm. And he was our go-to guy down in the valley. And you need Cocaine Anonymous, you need an AA contact down in the valley, you call me and I'll give you Alan's number, because he's active in the deal. He's worked the steps. We know he has because he's working with us. He stays connected.
Really, and
then he dropped off. And he got a little pissing contest with somebody in Cocaine Anonymous.
My name's Chris.
Grateful recovered. They had a little disagreement.
How cool is this?
He solved the disagreement by taking his big book and going home.
To talk about this 12 steps.
I can relate to this. I mean, I'm a big
a lot of work.
The discipline, the 10 step, remember, and he went home, and he's sharp, and he goes to his church, and he's okay, and God. And yet, gradually, day by day, the internal condition came back and started kicking his butt. And the answer in his head was, about 3 years after he walked out of that meeting, was, I can smoke pot. And that's what he did. And he led him back to the other stuff, and now he's, I don't know how it's going to all end up. He's very sick now physically, and I see thousands of these things. Alcoholism is progressive. It's genetic, we talked about earlier, and it will get you eventually. What worked for you 10 years ago ain't necessarily going to work with you today. What y'all need to hear about me and my story is that I work with more guys now than I ever did when I first got sober. You follow? And it's like, because I have to. Because I feel a sense of urgency to do it, some responsibility to do it, but I want to stay connected. And I got to tell you, we were talking earlier about the spiritual connection. I watch in Alcoholics Anonymous, all of our fellowships, I watch a bunch of us have the same experience over and over with God. And there's nothing wrong with that, except that eventually it'll stop working for you. My sponsor always says, Chris, I smell more. And that's what I'm asking you guys. That's what I smell more. I don't want to live off the experience that I had 21 years ago. I sat on the tailgate of a truck 2 weeks after I started doing the work and cried in the presence of God, knowing that I was safe and that I was protected. And that was a pretty cool experience. But guys, I'm not living off that experience. I remember it because I talk about it quite frequently. But I'm excited about the experiences that I've had. Somebody asked me about some spiritual reading, and I've spent some time in airports, and I find myself in this last year or two just, you know, I mean, being touched by other literature, not just AA stuff, just being pulled in certain directions. It was a couple of years ago, I made a decision that I wasn't going to do this anymore. I was sick and tired of taking flack from people that I didn't want to take flack from. And, you know, just because you tell somebody the truth doesn't make you mean it. But it translates that way sometimes. You know what I'm saying? I tell you something, you don't want to hear it, then I'm the bad guy. And yet, the true friends that we have in this world are the people that will do that. My friends will tell me if I've got a little booger in my nose, you know? But let's face it, most of us will just snicker and look the other way. You know, oh my God, he's got a booger in his nose. You know, but some of you guys, you'll call a spade, and that's what we do. And we're not trying to be mean or hurtful. But we're just, you know, if what you're doing is working for you, rock on. But if it's not working for you, if you don't feel like you're being fulfilled in the fellowship, if you're walking into these meetings and you're just bored with AA, then there's a problem there. Why don't we listen to this, look at this spiritually, and let's fix the problem. Because that's what this is all about. This is spiritual growth. It's what Eddie was talking about. It's what Bill was talking about. I want to grow spiritually. I don't want to stay the same. And God continues to... Man, I'm sitting in that one of the books. There's a book about homeless guys in Fort Worth, written by the same difference as me. And it's written about this black guy, this slave. And he comes and he's living on the street. And anyway, he becomes friends with this guy. And they start a mission. And they're down there feeding the poor. And I'm sitting there, and I've about got everybody convinced that I can get off the circuit. I've talked to my sponsor, and well, Chris, you do what you need to do. And I've talked to work, and I've talked to my wife, and I'm going to back off, and I'm going to only like speak maybe 5-6 times a year, and I'm just going to back completely off, you know. And of course, I read this book, and I'm sitting on the airplane coming back from Seattle, and there's a Korn has a song called "Coming Undone." And I'm on this plane, and this flight attendant's walking by, and she stops, and she said, "Are you all right?" And I'm coming undone. You follow? I'm sitting on this plane crying like a girl. And I have to put the book down, and I'll stop, and I'll get my stuff together.
and open it back up, and start crying again. It's like, because God's having his way with me sitting on that airplane. I wish he would just wait until I got home, you know, so I could cry like a girl in private. But I got to do it on a crowded American flight. And I God's going to take you to, you know what? God will tell me when I'm done. God will tell you when you're done. You know, my mama asked me the other day, she said, Chris, when's your debt to AA going to be paid? She asks that all the time. Every time holiday comes, when's your debt to AA? I'm going to tell you something. My debt to Alcoholics Anonymous will never be done. My mama didn't. Yeah. Well, my mama didn't see me eating out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. She did not. I made a special attention to protect her from a lot of crazy stuff that we did out there. And she didn't have to see that. She didn't need to know about it. But bottom line is, when will my debt be? Listen, guys, when I'm sitting on the tailgate of that truck and it hits me for the first time in my adult life that the obsession to drink and to do cocaine and to eat those pills is gone, I'm going to tell you, it was an experience. And I knew from that moment that you could get free from this. But those old geezers, when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, that old guy that got hold of me and that kid that started to sponsor me, he was a year sober, less than a year sober, when he started sponsoring me. And he said, buddy, this is what we're going to do. My sponsor had me working with others.
We did this in Iceland one time, not realizing that all the page numbers were different. All that great planning on my part was right out the window. Those who are unable to drink moderately, drug moderately, I don't have a problem in the world with that, but I'm here to share some experience with the steps and sponsorship and the program of recovery from my perspective, my point of view. Years working in the treatment center industry and years trying to get sober and not being able to get sober. So I get lots of emails from lots of people around the world, and a lot of you guys, I mean, you truly do share my...
I don't know what I just said I'll do, but you... And your sponsor will say, that's okay. I don't know either. We'll walk together through this. When I got there in 1987, these old guys got around and they said, Chris, the reason you can't stay sober is because you're selfish and self-centered to the core. You do great as long as everything's going your way. But when life starts throwing you some zingers, you crumble like a deck of cards. You need to realize that you have a place here, that you're going to be able to touch certain people that nobody else can touch. So why don't you practice getting out of yourself? It looks like this. We're going to go make some coffee. We're going to clean up the ashtrays. No, I don't smoke. You clean up the ashtrays. No, you're here to serve the group. We will clean up the ashtrays. Y'all follow? We need somebody to answer the phone. No, I just got here. I am the most important person here, remember? I got my little desire chip. I'm going to milk this for a while. I'm going to walk around and feel sorry for myself. And I think I'm detoxing still. I need to... No. They said, buddy, you can do that, but you're going to answer the phone. And the phone rang. Ding, 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 you know. And I'm sitting there. No. See, I don't want to look stupid. That's it. That's the biggest fear in this room right now. That's why you won't sponsor somebody. That's why you won't reach out to help somebody. You don't want to look stupid. You're afraid you're going to hurt somebody. Yeah, how can you hurt a drunk? I mean, it's a train wreck, guys. It's already a bloody mess. You can't mess it up. We're going to go into this thing with working with others with a clear understanding that we are not therapists, we are not doctors, and we are not bankers. I need to borrow some money. Don't do that. I need some... What do I do? I don't know. I got to listen.
We did this in Iceland one time, not realizing that all the page numbers were different. All that great planning on my part was right out the window. In the program of recovery, from my perspective, my point of view, years working in the treatment center industry and years trying to get sober and not being able to get sober. So I get lots of emails from lots of people around the...
Eat me. No, because I don't want to do anything because it makes me feel uncomfortable. Remember the first time somebody asked me to read how it works? I got a little throat thing going on here. I don't want. Why? You're afraid you're going to mess it up? You are. Of course you are. So what? Everybody's going to laugh and we're going to move on. Stop taking yourself so seriously. These guys just sat right there waiting. I said, okay, what do I do? She says, now you're talking. Answer the phone. Louisville group. Louisville group. Got that so far. I knew the person on the phone. That's how God works. And she says, Chris, is that you? And I says, so-and-so, is that you? And turned out I drank with her husband. And she wanted a meeting for an Al-Anon. She says, she wants an Al-Anon meeting. He said, the schedule's right there. Let me show you right here. Tell her right here. He says, listen, there's a meeting at 7 o'clock, and I'll be right here. I'm not doing anything. Obviously. Social calendar completely empty. And I'll meet you out front. You remember what I look like, and there you go. And so I waited for her, and she pulled up, and she got out. And she says, oh, I'm so glad you're here. I was so nervous to do this, but I've got to do something. She says, what are you doing down here? And she says, I'm sober. 2 days. But I'm but this is the grinder. But I'm sober, and I want to stay sober. You got to do exactly what the book says. You follow? Took her to the meeting. Back there, got her a cup of coffee, introduced her to the lady that I just met that day in Al-Anon, and she hugged her neck. Y'all follow? I walked back out to that phone room. Oh, I've done this. You know, phone rung, somebody was starting to reach for it. Oh, listen, buddy, you got to be careful here. This phone is very important and can be very dangerous. Oh, shit. I could be back down the hall in the bathroom and the phone ring. I'll get it. Oh, shit. They created a damn monster. But what they did was they gave me the opportunity to feel useful. You follow? Guys, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. And now they're telling me, oh, you can do this. You can help us out. I want to make a point real clear because people want to split hairs with this all the time. Working with others doesn't necessarily mean sponsorship. You can't show somebody how to do a four-step unless you've done a four-step. But if you've done a four-step, you better be out there showing somebody how to do a four-step or you're going to forget how to do it. Make sense? You can't give away what you don't have. But this idea that we're going to put a time limit, you can't sponsor anybody until you've been sober a year. Why? Why? We don't have time to wait for you to get a year under your belt. Because if you wait a year to start working with others, you're not going to get a year. Working with others is anything that has to do with helping an alcoholic or a dope fiend stay sober. You follow? Page 129 in the bottom of the page, it says, even if he displays a certain amount of neglect and irresponsibility towards the family, it is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. Did you get it? During those first days of convalescence. And we're killing people all over AA land by telling people that they can't do anything until they've been sober a period of time. Why can't the person, if the meeting's set up properly and you've got a format there, why can't a newcomer chair a meeting? Why? Why you have to wait 6 months before you can chair a meeting? Because if you wait too long to start feeling responsible, you're not going to stay sober. Again, the book says, unless you can give back, you're not going to be able to keep it. We've got these little lathered up buckaroos all over the country right now, one drunk at a time, this juggernaut of new sobriety. Of course, they're taking flack from the old geezers, a lot of them sitting in the back of the room taking their inventory. They're too young. They shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't sponsor anybody to you. Why? Because you see, in sponsorship, I'm not taking these little guys on to raise. I don't want to raise you. I want to get you connected spiritually, pat you on the popo, and go get me another one. That's why so many of you are afraid to do it. Well, what happens if he needs this? What happens if she needs that? Then you connect them to a responsible member of the world unity. Y'all follow what I'm saying? You don't have to have... It's okay in sobriety to say, you know, damn it, I don't know. Let's go to my sponsor and we'll find out. Here. I read this when I talk about working with others. It was in a box 459 around 2000, right before 9/11. It came out. This was at Christmas time. It said, the most frustrating thing about answering intergroup's phones, says Bob R., manager of the Intergroup Association in New York City, is finding an AA member willing to take a 12-step call for some sick alcoholic who's phoned us for help. Sometimes it takes up to 20 calls to identify just one willing volunteer. Some of the responses we hear when a live member actually does answer the phone, what's a 12-step call? How did you get my phone number? Do you mean you actually want me to talk to someone who's still drinking? The saddest response came from a member who exclaimed, no, I can't do it. I'm busy all day. Today is my sobriety anniversary. I know, I love you guys. Listen, guys, this is a result of what we call, affectionately, piss-poor sponsorship. We've let too many people off the hook. believing that you can get a free ride in this thing. You can't. Big Book says a price has got to be paid. Everybody gets a chance to work with another drunk, folks. In their own way. Not the way Chris Kramer does it. Not the way Ron does it. The way you do it. You with us? Bill Wilson and Bill's story up in the front, it says, each in our own way carries the message. You don't have to be like me. We don't want you to be like me. Got enough. Thank you. Oh, we want you to be like you. That's who God made you. I've seen it 1,000 times. You'll be sitting in there like this, and a little guy will come up and look around, and he'll come sit right next to you. You follow? Now it's going to heat up. You're going to stay there and be awake, be present. Is your spirit going to be alert enough to see what's happening here? He's coming apart at the seams, sitting right next to you. He keeps looking over at you. What do you think he wants, the time? He's coming undone. Something's happening. Treatment centers told him to go find a sponsor. He's saddled up next to one of you guys, comfortable with you. Now you get to decide. Because they're going to turn right on you right after the meeting. Excuse me a minute. Can I talk to you for a second? I need this. I'm not sure about this sponsor thing, but I think I'm supposed to get one. And then you get to decide. You, the responsible member, so you say, you're going to dust him, her? Honey, I'd like to help you, but I just started this new job and the kids are sick and I just really don't have time right now. But I can hook you up to somebody that can. I'm going to ask you one more time. Who in the hell's in charge here? I mean, last time I looked, God's in charge. I think God knows that you're starting a new job and the kids are sick. And I think you need something to get your head out of that for a minute and try to help somebody else. Otherwise, you're going to crumble under a deck of cards. Y'all understand what we're saying here? This idea, Myers talks about it from the podium. There's some people that are good sponsors and some people that are bad sponsors. And that lets everybody off the hook. My experience is that every little fruitcake in the world gets an opportunity to turn around and help somebody else. And that's what it's about. The guys that I sponsor, it's all about accountability. If I'm sponsoring you, you with me? We're through the steps in 30 days, 45 days max, we're through the steps. And if you don't have a commitment, a service commitment, and are not sponsoring somebody, we're having to talk. You follow? Because in this climate, if you can't find somebody to sponsor in a couple of months, you're not even trying. Are you coming before the meeting and staying late? You know, are you coming in after? Because that's what I did for 7 years. Chris, for 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, did you sponsor anybody? No. And you have the cojones to stand there and say that you were in AA for 7 years? All of these guys, we talked about it earlier today, they come back in after a relapse, come back into that hospital. We ask them point blank. I said, buddy, how many people would you sponsor? None. Why? We're losing the battle. Success rates through the toilet. There's not enough to go around, especially with the women. Number one email I get from all over the world are women looking for women sponsors. There's thousands of women sober out there. They know exactly where to go to buy that special shampoo. They can tell you all about lighting candles and taking long bubble baths and being good to you. But if it gets down to brass tacks and they got to tell somebody how to finish a 4-step and get off dead center on that stupid amend, they can't do it. And so we keep sending them to the same women over and over and over until they just get wore out. It's time for everybody to get in the trench. Y'all with it? We were laughing about it, driving through Houston in a pouring rainstorm. I looked over to my right-hand side. They got a big ditch down there, and there's a couple of little Mexican laborers down there with shovels. I mean, wet as if they crawled out of the river, and then just pouring, and they got 7 guys in slickers with clipboards standing on the outside of the ditch looking in, kind of pointing fingers, checking it out. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm preaching to the choir because I know a bunch of you in the room. You're active in service work. You're doing the deal. I've talked to you. You're sponsoring a bunch of people. I'm not even kind of going near you. Welcome. But the cats that are not doing it, you're missing the point. I just touched on it. The first time you walk into an AA club, into an AA meeting, a church fellowship hall, and you walk in and you hear somebody talking in the back, and you sneak around and you look around the corner, and you see one of the little guys that you've been taking through the work, and he's got a big book open, and he's got his finger in this little guy's nose, and he's telling his guy, now listen here, now I want you to pay attention here. I'm going to show you something really important here. Oh my gosh! And I got to tell you, you'll back up like this, and tears will come to your eyes, because you'll start to see exactly what this is about. You got to give it away in order to keep it. Everybody gets to do it. The question to God is this. Since where can I be of the most service? What can I do? There's a great book out there called Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age on page 119. It's one of my favorite passages. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps of recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. Drunkenness and disintegration are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They are results of personal disobedience to spiritual principles. We must obey certain principles or we die. The principle of giving is the keystone of what this whole thing is about. One drunk working with another drunk. One little pillhead working with another little pillhead. That's how this thing works. You give it away, you get to keep it. Remember what we talked about, what goes around comes around? So I'm over here taking care of this little girl that I don't even want. Some of these guys that call me, guys, it's like, oh my God, please God, anything but this guy. I hate this guy. You follow? He comes up and says, buddy, I know we've had our differences in the past, but I'm dying here. I really need some help. Can you work with me? Yes. You follow? You can hear an audible click in the universe. Because I'm doing something I don't want to do. But I'm going to do it because it's the right thing to do. And then over here, I get to see some good stuff coming my way. And I'd do it without that. I'd do it just with a sense of accomplishment. Oh my gosh. It's how XA speakers started in Iceland. Those little guys couldn't do 12-step work because nobody would let them do it. You got to be sober 2 years, sponsor. You got to be sober this long to do this. You got to be sober that long. You see, but you don't understand. I can't stay sober unless I work with somebody. Unless I feel useful. So they started XA Speakers. Don't tell me how many thousands of people have been helped by those websites. All 24-hour radio station out there on the ocean. Hundreds of emails from ship captains out there alone by themselves trying to stay sober, able to access those radios and those downloadable CDs. Because two little knucklehead, meth heads, alcoholics told the hierarchy, eat it. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I think we respect our elders. If you want to talk to me about the book and you want to talk to me and guide me and help me grow spiritually, I'm right there with you. If you want to tell me what I can't do in God's world, I want to tell you to back off. We've got too many people in this fellowship telling people what they can and cannot do. And this is up to God. See, here's what happens. Those guys got me in 1987, and I'm a fried pie. I tried to paint a picture of what I was like, but guys, I was insane. And one of the things that y'all need to understand is, I make it sound like, one, that they were really mean, and they weren't. They were very straight with me, because that's what I needed. I couldn't think in grays and hues. It was black or white. And they were very direct with me. But they didn't let me just run. Here, Chris, go get them. They walked with me. They set me down at the meeting and says, Chris, we're going to chair the meeting. Oh, man, I don't want to do this. I know you don't, buddy, but we need to get started because we need somebody to volunteer next month. I'm going to show you how to do it. Come on, get up here. And they walked through me and they showed me what the words were and they explained how we do things. You with us? They taught us. That's what we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. They were teachers. We're teachers. One of the biggest problems I have, I'm going to wind this. One of the biggest problems that we have, guys, in our fellowship today is that we have too many people just doing it the same old way that hasn't worked before. Our meeting formats are killing our fellowship. I know we were talking earlier about the grapevine. There was a great little article that talked about open discussion meetings, and everybody bought into that. It was the early 70s. And one of the things that happened was is that everybody, in their attempt to bond with the treatment center industry, decided that open discussion meetings were what we needed to do. In the early days, what we had was speaker meetings and step meetings. You with us? That's what we did, early days. But we don't do that anymore. What we did was we got on the open discussion. The newcomer needs a chance to talk about where he's at, because if he doesn't talk about it, he's going to drink over it. But you see, that's not what the big book says. The big book says, shut up talking about it and go help another drunk and you can stay sober. But we set up these little rules. 90 meetings in 90 days. Why? Why? It might be okay here in London when you've got a thousand meetings. But what about some little burg over there in the farmland? They got one meeting a week. Well, how bad do you want to stay sober? 90 meetings in 90 days. But, hon, that means I've got to drive 90 miles to get to a meeting. That means I can't do the farming. I can't be at the kids' recital. I can't do my other stuff. Well, how? I think if we were supposed to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, I think if we were supposed to be in a meeting every day, it would have said so in the book. But it doesn't. It says we're supposed to be of service to our human fellows. We're supposed to reintegrate with the mainstream of life. I'll tell you this right now, folks. I don't care how new you are. If you've got to make a decision between going to your son's little league game and going to an AA meeting, you better get your ass to that little league game. We're not painting a good... Y'all will run with this one. I can see already. But Chris said we don't need meetings. It's amazing to me what y'all hear me say. It freaks me. I'm not saying that. I'm sick and tired of the little one-liners killing people in our fellowship. Listen, guys, I didn't have anything going on. When I first got sober, I was in a meeting every damn day, sometimes twice. I went to probably over 100 meetings in 90 days. I mean, I didn't have a problem with that. You with us? But guys, it came a time that I had to go get two jobs so I could make financial restitution. Now, do I need to be going to a meeting because meeting makers make it? Or do I need to go pay the people that I've screwed for years? I need to go pay the people I've screwed for years. Then I can go back to the meeting. You follow? You can't work with anybody. Why? Bill Wilson's working with people like that. And that's why he stayed sober. How do you learn to work with others? You work with others. It's not something you can read out of a book. You've got to go do it. We're going to teach you how. One of the things I do with the AA guys that I get, the sponsees that I get, I spend some really quality time talking to them about, one, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous and the legacies that have been passed down. Y'all realize that just a generation ago, I mean, how many people, hundreds and thousands of people, were dying of this disease, locked up in insane asylums? And all of a sudden, 1935 comes down the pipe, and we got this real thing that worked. Now there's millions of us, just in AA alone, millions of us sober. We are the one thing that has been proven to work for real alcoholics and real drug addicts. This is the one thing that works. It's the responsibility of each of us to carry that message. When they came out with that responsibility placard, AA talked about it. They talked about we. NA does it with a lot of it. We as a fellowship. We as a fellowship. But it starts with me. It starts with me. I'm responsible. If I'm sitting in a meeting and the little newcomer walks in the door and the whole group is sitting and talking and visiting and having a good old time, it's my responsibility to get off my dead ass, excuse me, I'm leaving for just a second, I'll finish this in a minute, and go see if I can grab that newcomer. That's what guys that I sponsor do. They watch the door. They can watch the babe over here too. And I know they're doing that because I'm watching her too. You think that stuff stops when you get sober? You're mistaken. I am happily married, but I watch everything. But I'm also watching the damn door. I'm paying attention to what's going on there. Because if somebody comes in and one of my guys is not there, we're going to have a talk. You follow? My responsibility. I'm not going to look the other way. Hey, buddy, the little new guy came in. He's sitting in the back the whole damn time. Not one of you went and got and saw him. Why? You follow? Because your job is to do that. It's not to visit. You can visit later. Go get the cat. That's what we do. I talk to them about the responsibility to carry this message to the alcoholic, and we get them active in bed. I talk to them about AA etiquette. We don't talk about it much. We're not going to talk about it a lot now. But I have a responsibility to teach you, if I'm sponsoring you, how to dress in an AA meeting, what to do in an AA meeting, how to be punctual. I know some of this has got to go. If you're an old geezer and you need to pee a lot, sit close to the bathrooms so that you're not disturbing everybody in the place every time you get up. You with us? Ladies, I'm telling you. Half the complaints that my wife gets are the women she's sponsoring. Those men look at me, they look at me like I'm a whore. Well, honey, stop dressing like one. Good heavens, I don't... I understand fashion, but gee whiz, I mean, it makes an old man like me sweat. You wonder about these little new guys trying to get them to focus? Oh my gosh. Y'all follow what I'm saying? We talk about etiquette. We talk about getting on time and talking to the speaker and being a part of the group. And if you see something happening, you know, you take care of it. You be a part of this thing. Because that's what we are. Dr. Bob Beale, one of his best quotes was, you know, carry the message, and if you must, use words. Because people are watching us. They see us in meetings. So pay attention how you dress when you speak from the podium and what you say. And no. You know, that's the way we do it. Pay attention. I started sponsoring guys when I first got sober, not because I wanted to, but again, because somebody pointed out that it was my job to do that. And I fought it real hard because I didn't want to, you know, get involved in that. And I thought I could put it off. And I was so lucky that I had somebody that really kind of forced me to do it. And I've been sponsoring people ever since. I have a sponsor, Mark Houston in Manor, Texas. A lot of y'all know Mark. He's a good friend of mine. He's been a good sponsor, good friend, and I love him dearly. And he has people he sponsors, and I do. I sponsor a bunch of guys local and a bunch of long distance. We have a little group called Mad Dogs. We meet every 2 weeks, on Thursday nights. Tonight they're meeting without me, there'll be 40 people in there. People I sponsor, the people you sponsor, and the people you follow, my lineage. And we'll get in there and we do an accountability group, a little mini steel on steel. I've got those formats if y'all ever want them, because y'all can start that stuff. But it's a great way to keep your women. If you're sponsoring a bunch of women, you get together. And it's about holding each other accountable. How many meetings are you going to? How many guys are you sponsoring? What's your weekly commitment? Well, I've committed to come to the meeting on Tuesday night. That's not a commitment. Making the damn coffee and taking the ashtrays out is a commitment. Picking the stupid the butts up from the parking lot is a commitment. You follow? Everybody gets a service commitment, or we don't play. We just get a chance to be real with each other. Because the more people, we talked about it earlier, that can get to know me, my exercise program, guys, was completely changed as a result of a little guy that was about 6 months sober busting my chops about my dishonesty around exercise. I quit smoking nearly 2 years ago, quit dipping, quit smoking cigars as a result of a little guy that was brand new sober calling me on my stuff. You with me? Bastards. I hated them. I know today. Don't you know who you're talking to? No. But you see, I give the guys, we have these things in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have these things called unsigned death packs. And a lot of you guys are a part of that. I'm going to not call you on your stuff, and you don't call me on my stuff, and we're going to be kumbaya until the day cows come home. I love you, love you, love you. You with me? And you can cheat on your wife, and you can lie on your expense reports, and you can do all this other happy horse, but I'm not going to say anything because you'd have to say something with me too. We don't do that. I'm going to watch your back, you're going to watch my back. You with me? I am my brother's keeper. If I can ever help you, you let me know. Meeting formats need to change, folks. I don't know. I love the primary purpose formats for the workbooks. I love the as-built seasoned meetings. I love the big book meetings where we just read a couple of paragraphs and talk about it. Anything that takes us away from, well, this is your meeting. What do y'all want to talk about today? And everybody laughs and everybody says, I hate those kind of meetings. And yet the meeting formats stay open discussion heavy with that. I know some people like that, but a lot of people stay away from our fellowships because of those meetings. They cannot stand those meetings. So let's have a few more big book meetings, literature-based meetings. You can't go wrong with those meetings. Because we're going to end up, one way or another, talking about the steps in God. And that's ultimately what we're at. Y'all cool with that? And big time. When I was 14 years old, and I remember about the age that I was, because I was sitting out on a back porch, picnic table thing there, and my dad used to sit out there and drink. And this was long before I started drinking. I drank at 17. The month that Bill Wilson passed away in 1971, I started drinking in January 1971. But I'm sitting there out on Goat Creek Road. This is country as they come. And I'm sitting out there and I'm crying, and my mom comes out and I'm trying to hide the tears in dusk. And she says, What's wrong? What's up? And I'm coming apart. Y'all understand, the spiritual malady at 14 years old is kicking my ass. I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I have this low self-esteem, this feeling of uselessness. The depression's kicking my butt. You with me? Now, 3 more years, I was to find a solution for that. It's called Boone's Farm Apple Wine. But at the time, I didn't have it. But my prayer to God that night after Mom left, my prayer to God was, and I was a church guy at the time, I'm a Baptist church, and my prayer to God was, God, I just feel so useless. I said, if you could just find something that I could be useful at, if you could just give me a job, I'd be cool. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. I wish I'd been more specific with the prayer. I wish it involved a hot woman and lots of money, but it wasn't. It was, I wish I could be useful. That was the prayer. You know, fast forward, you know, 3 more years, I took a drink. 19 years later, I crawled into an AA meeting after a suicide attempt. I guess about 6 months after that, I'm sitting over at this other group in Lewisville, Texas, and I'm helping this old geezer pick up coffee cups, and I got the drill down. I know what I'm supposed to be doing. And he's washing coffee cups, and he's got these little glasses off. And I've talked about this 1,000 times. Some of you have heard me talk about it. His name was ML. He's passed away now, but he was old, sober, long time. And he took his little glasses off like I had, and he was wiping his glasses, and his eyes were teared up just like mine are now. And he looked at me, and he said, buddy, He says, we need you. It caught me up short. We need you. See, that's like light years compared to keep coming back. What if you work it? That's a general statement. He looked me in the face with tears in his eyes. And I want to argue with him about it. Like, what could I possibly do? He says, you need to understand. He says, the legacy is carried from Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob in those first 100 to the next generation and the next generation. And if you break that, then how many other people are not going to get the message? We have so many people out there that want to talk about the damage we did. You drank a drug and you caused all this problem. And we seem to want to focus on that. But just think, just the simple act of doing this. I'm not going to drink and drug anymore. I'm done. On a daily basis, I'm going to live my life differently. We don't ever think about the thousands of people, the family members that have come into the program because we simply got sober. The people around us at work that got sober because we simply stopped using. The ripple effect of our sobriety. I think there's a dark side out there, folks, that would like to just simply say this, point blank, that you're not needed, that you're ineffectual, that you're too messed up, that you're too bruised to help anybody. That's what the dark side would like. You're too much of a fried pie. You're too young. You don't fit in. You can't do this. You can't do that. That's what the dark side would like. A fellowship of ineffectual people, bound by a bunch of things that don't matter. A bunch of thoughts and attitudes about people that should have kept them to themselves to begin with. M.L. Rowland looked at me with tears in his eyes and said, we need you. Do what's right in front of you. Do the next right thing right. And people's lives will change. Now, buddy, I can sink my teeth into that because all I ever wanted to do was be useful. Never wanted to be rich. Never wanted to be handsome. All I wanted to do was wake up in the morning and know that my life mattered. We got too many people in our fellowships letting people off the hook. And I'm telling you this right now. I'll end with it. Every one of you little guys sitting in this room that's carried a big book, all busted up and walked into a meeting and tried to change the topic when it was some stupid, ridiculous. Thank you. For every single person in here that grabbed a little newcomer when you were booked up already and had plenty to do on your plate, but nobody else seemed to want to go out of their way to help them. Thank you. For every woman that stood around and stayed, every one of you little guys that stayed in here, got a couple of months under your belt and you're here, you're home. Every one of you old geezers that got a bunch of years under your belt and you keep coming back and you keep taking the flack. You listen to the crap, but you keep coming. You cannot... You'll never know how much I appreciate it. I'm 21 years sober, and I don't have a clue how to stay sober 22 years. Not a clue. You think it's the same. It's not. Every year's different. I'm shaving last year, shaving like this, and I see this antenna coming out of the side of my ear. No, my baby, I'm not talking about in my ear. I'm talking about out of the side of my freaking ear. There's a hair this long. I look like an insect. No, nobody told me about that. You think that little whippersnapper's going to tell you about it? Uh-uh. It's got them old geezers. Yeah, oh my gosh. I don't know what it's like, but I know this. We're on a rocket ride to the coolest life we can imagine, folks. And I'm not trying to blow smoke or paint a picture that this is all Pollyanna. It's tough. It's tough in the trench. When you go to group conscience and you say, guys, we've got 70 open discussion meetings. We've got no open literature meetings. We've got no big book studies. I'd like to suggest that we close down a couple of those open discussions and maybe start a big book meeting. You're going to take all kinds of flack. First time you start talking about God in a meeting. Bill Wilson didn't have a problem talking about God in a meeting, but all of a sudden we get real sensitive. No, you be careful with the HP word. I am. I'm so careful with it, I won't use it. It's God. Jeez Louise. First time you get in a meeting though and start talking about it, somebody's going to bust your butt. Somebody's going to jam you on it. For any of you that have taken flack, I want to thank you for doing it. I got to tell you, for every one of you guys that are just brand new here, I talked to some of you cats that just have a few days sober under your belt. I'm going to tell you the same thing ML told me. We need you. Thanks so much.